Hello, welcome to The Musics in Japan,
a conversational podcast about daily life for an American couple living long-term in Japan.
So recently, I've been thinking about imperialism, which, oddly enough, I think about every January, I think, because we're in Japan, I think about imperialism, because whoever the prime minister is, well, it's been Abe for many, many years, but we have a new prime minister now, and they always do something with imperialism, like, because the emperor's not really that active. Like, I don't know what the emperor does. Like, every now and then there'll be a news story about the emperor, because we're in Nagoya, so.
By law, the emperor is a ceremonial figurehead, so he actually has no power. And if he were to exert power, it would be considered improper. So, like the previous emperor, when he said that he didn't think the constitution should be amended to give Japan its own military outside of the
That was scandalous.
Right. Because Japan has the self-defense force, which is a military, but it's not technically a military. And when they send troops overseas, they're humanitarian troops, like medics and things. So it's a whole thing. But yeah.
And a lot of agriculturalists. They send a lot of agriculturalists.
Right. Yeah. They overseas.
But not everybody likes rice. And so they have like this grain, they have several strains of rice that can grow anywhere.
Right.
And so they're always going over to countries and trying to get them to eat rice. And not everybody likes rice.
Yeah, there are different strains of rice that can grow in brackish water or in fresh water or with little water or are drought resistant, the various things. But yeah, so it was a scandal, like minor scandal, when the emperor actually spoke out about a perhaps political issue. So a lot of the right-wingers who claim to speak for the emperor, the previous emperor made it clear they don't actually speak for him. Yeah. And that he is opposed to everything that they want.
Yeah.
But he can't say that too much, because then they'll be like, you're violating the constitution, which says that you're a ceremonial figurehead.
Yeah. So the current prime minister wants to actually start to ramp up militarization of Japan's forces, because he misses when, and this is so bizarre to me that a prime minister, like I feel like the prime minister says the parts that are not supposed to be said. He misses when Japan was an imperialistic force in Asia. And I personally, like, everything I've read, because I wasn't in Asia at that time.
You weren't alive at that time?
Yeah, we don't say that I wasn't alive at any time. Like, the music notes know that I'm forever.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so.
I apologize.
Yeah. My father was here, like, during the Korean War.
Yes, which was also after that time. But again,
but my grandfather was too old to be drafted in World War II.
Yes, he was.
So there you have it, folks. I was here. I could have been here.
You could have been here.
Yes. By the way I do math and the way I see the world and think about the world, I so could have been here during imperialistic Japan. And I watched The Last Emperor twice.
Well, see, if you'd only watched it once, then I would doubt you. But the fact that you got through it twice, you must be an immortal being.
Thank you. I watched it twice. So I'll be honest. I watched it the second time because a chick I was getting with wanted to watch it. And then I was
shocked. That should have been a sign.
Yeah, and I was really shocked that she wanted to, like, watch it, because it's a really long movie.
Yeah.
And then she was pissed off at me when I fell asleep. Like, after the movie, I was exhausted.
That's like being pissed off.
Exhausting. I hadn't already seen it.
It's like being pissed off if somebody falls asleep during The Right Stuff. They have an intermission for a reason.
Right? Or like, what was that one, that three-act play with Elizabeth Taylor and, what's his name, Richard Burton? Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's a three-act play. So it has two intermissions. So, yeah, it's like that. Even though all of these things we're saying are completely unrelated. But I just can't believe she got mad at me. And it was even weirder because she was Filipina, but she wouldn't say she was Filipina. She would say that she was Spanish. and indigenous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting, but...
Oh, no, wait. She said she was Spanish and Japanese. That's what it was. Because, like, I don't do, like, fake... I'm indigenous, and so my temperament towards people who claim to be indigenous who are not is, like,
yeah, can't handle it. Spanish and indigenous is, like, a South American thing. There are a lot of people who are Spanish and indigenous, yeah. But...
Like, a lot of people.
Yeah.
Even in... On any of the Americas, that right, like right. thing, and all throughout Puerto Rico and the islands, there's a lot of that. So, it was weird to me that she was saying she was Spanish and Japanese, and she said that her family was full blooded Spanish, and it was weird because I went over to her house for dinner, and I love Filipino food, so it was like. Full Filipino spread with like Filipino bread and lumpias and like all kinds of like all my favorite Filipino stuff. They even had like the goat milk candy. It was so good. So good. Stuffed myself up. That should have been like the first indicator that I was not
compatible.
Yeah, not gonna get down on the get down because I was like, I was full, full, full. And then so the movie was like a good idea to me because it's like, okay, cool. Then
I'm full. I can watch a 4-hour movie.
Yeah. And then afterwards, I was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
She was, like, so upset that I met her family, which I didn't plan. I was picking her up to go to a club, and then her mom invited us in, and then I had dinner. And then she's like, how about we stay in and watch a movie? And I was like, okay. And this is before Netflix and chill was even a thing.
So was she upset about your action, or was she upset that she watched The Last Emperor?
I think she's upset at her parents,
because
her parents kept checking on us. And so I think she thought her parents were stopping us from having sex when she realized that I was just overfull.
Yeah.
And tired at that point.
Yeah, that's not the way to get you in the mood.
No, not at all. Like, you have to starve me.
In the mood for sleep, yes.
Yeah. So you know, like, you don't feed me first. You have sex and then you feed me. Like, come on now. I think that's like sexing, getting someone to like want to have sex with you one-on-one. I've never understood, like, the dinner and sex thing. Like, who wants to have sex on a full stomach?
Right?
I mean, we've done it, but it wasn't the most comfortable.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that in terms of, like, a dinner date. Like, reverse the order.
Yeah, you've always thought, like, the dinner then sex thing was weird.
Yeah, I have.
And I was like, but it's supposed to be, like, you go to dinner and movies and then sex.
I think the movie is supposed to give you time to digest, but I like popcorn.
Yeah, I like popcorn. And if we're going to the movies, I prefer to have a hot dog and popcorn.
Exactly.
But now, ever since I watched Big Little Lies season 2, I'll never eat sausage again. Like that episode on how bad sausage is for the world that made the little girl faint in the cupboard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do any more spoilers than that. It was made me think, wow, sausage is bad. Like, really bad for the earth.
Mm.
I had no idea. It takes, like, 500 gallons of water to make one sausage. At least that's what it said on Big Little Lies. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
so when it comes to imperialism, to me, I think imperialism is bad. But the way that Japan talks about imperialism is very propaganda. And it makes it sound good. So, like, everything Japan does... Everything the prime minister does, because there's not freedom of the press here the way there is in other places of the world.
Right.
Which I think freedom of the press is a farce. Myself personally, fight me on that. You know, leave comments.
But that fight will not be publicized.
Like, you can go to our Twitter and you can tell me what country you're from and explain to me how you actually have freedom of the press.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will explain to you how you don't, and it will make you sad. So, because this is something I've thought about and investigated quite a lot, and there's censorship everywhere. And so, for the United States specifically, I love the Freedom of Information Act that I'm doing in air quotes for every single one of those words. You can go and get all the redacted documents you want.
Yes.
So there is no true freedom.
If you really want some pieces of paper with just black bars all over the words.
Yeah, you
request can get away.
That.
Yeah.
They're more than happy to give you that. And there are some people who are really good at combing through tons and tons of redacted documents to tease out information. But here's the thing. The people redacting the documents left that those pieces of information in to satiate the people who are good at putting all of those pieces together. And it is like, you can look it up for yourself and read the history books, the history of redaction, and see that this is not something I'm making up. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, or I don't follow a lot of conspiracy theorists, and I don't buy into a lot of conspiracies. But when it comes to redacting a document, it is an art form.
Yeah.
And it's something that I found really interesting.
It's not a conspiracy, it's a bureaucracy.
Yes, and I am obsessed with bureaucracy because I think bureaucracy is a wonderful thing. I love bureaucracy. I love rules. I really am a firm believer in before you can break the rules, you have to know the rules and know how to break them and why you're breaking them, or know how to follow them and why you're following them. I think if there are no rules, it kind of makes choice a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah.
And my personality. So I love a lot of bureaucracy, which is why we love it here in Japan, because you also love a lot of bureaucracy.
I do, yeah. And so Japan's history with imperialism has been interesting, because technically it's still an imperialistic country because it has an empire. But that's not what's usually meant by imperialism.
Emperor. Yeah.
Yeah, it still has an emperor. But usually meant is like imperial colonialism.
Do you think the mic will pick it up?
I don't think so.
Okay, because I really want to comb my hair.
Yeah, and if it does, I think it'll just be a little bit. And people will be like, wow, we are hearing the sound of Christopher combing her hair.
I have really long hair. It goes down to my waist. But it's also really thin and fine. So it, like, if the wind blows too hard on it or anything happens, it will tangle.
Like, yes.
If you look too hard at it, it will tangle. And mm-hmm. I need to comb it and put it
I can only look at it in mirrors and other reflections. So it's not vampire hair.
No.
Because
it's not vampire hair.
So Japan was closed to the rest of the world for hundreds of years and only open at Goto Island to Dutch traders. And
oh, then they made that horrible movie about when the Catholics were trying to force it open.
The Portuguese missionaries, but there were only like 16 of them who came over here to try and force it open, and they were executed by the local warlord, the local daimyo.
Yeah,
because
no,
they
that
were.
The movie made it seem like there were droves of them.
There were 16,
and
they were
acting like that movie was just such really bad propaganda.
Yeah, and they were executed for
it's
trying.
Like Darth Vader. That guy will always be Darth Vader to me now.
Okay. They were trying to get the local populace to rise up and like declare that they have no lord except Jesus Christ and all that. When you're in a feudal system, you know, your feudal lord is your lord, and saying that you have no lord except Jesus, like in feudal Europe, they were like, here's how it roots back to Jesus so that you can, you know, have your local lords and ladies.
Yeah.
But I was reading this fiction book, this novel, that's what they're called. I know this word. About the 1700s, and these characters were in Italy, and they were like eating delicacies from Japan and shooting off bottle rockets. And I was like, no. Bottle rockets were not invented for another 100 years, which I had to look up. I knew it was wrong, but I didn't know how wrong. But the Japanese thing bugged me more because I knew that at that time, the only people allowed to visit Japan were the Dutch, and they were only allowed to go to one island off the coast of Japan.
Yeah.
And so that was during the Edo period. And then in the 1880s...
And the Edo period is your jam.
Yeah, the Edo period is my jam. So in the 1880s, Admiral Perry from the United States came over and forced them to open up by using... like an entire navy, not just a few missionaries. And that was the beginning of the Meiji Restoration, when Edo's name was changed later to Tokyo and all of that. So there have been a lot of different eras in Japan, and a lot of the imperial art is celebrating those eras. So it's interesting that the art that.
Yeah, and I think it's weird that the imperial art, like every time the imperial art is on display, it's a huge deal. It's very rarely on display.
Yeah, so the three treasures are always on display, except for minor exceptions when they're being cleaned or whatever. Yeah. So I think there's two in near Tokyo, and we've got one here in Issei.
Yeah.
Or maybe we've got... No, we've got two here, because we've got one at Atsuta Shrine.
Yeah.
One in Issei, and then one in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So we have not been to see all three. We've seen the one at Atsuta Shrine.
No, We saw the one in Tokyo.
Okay, then we haven't seen the one in Issei, because we haven't gone there specifically.
Yeah, we haven't seen the one in Issei, but we saw the one here, and we saw the one at Atsuta. We saw the one in Tokyo.
Okay.
We saw that one when we were on one of the times we came here as tourists.
Oh, okay.
Before we lived here.
Yeah. And then...
It was in Lonely Planet.
Okay.
Which is like our favorite travel book. We're not going to talk more about them, because for $100 Lonely Planet, you could have got a commercial video. What? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
People's mouths don't get fed. I'm hungry.
And we were planning to go to Issei this summer, but then...
You know.
Everything was closed, so yeah. We didn't. So maybe later we'll go to Issei and see that third one. But yeah, a lot of the art from the Meiji era, which is when Japan was like, you know what, if we're not going to be close to the rest of the world, then we should conquer it.
Yeah.
And went and occupied a bunch of the Korean Peninsula and parts of China and such.
And did horrible things. Horrible things.
As all colonizers do. Yeah. And
America's no exception. America's a colonizing nation.
Yes. Just ask Hawaiians about that.
Yeah. So, and the Philippines.
Yes.
And Guam.
Yes.
And Puerto Rico.
And the U.S. Virgin Islands and all that. Yeah. So
the list goes on and on. Occupiers occupy. That's what they do.
But most of the art during that period was celebrating the heyday that had occurred during the Edo period. And so, like, it was, like, historical art. And we see the same thing today. Where a lot of art, like American pop art, often is pop art of the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah.
It's not pop art of today. Or if it is, it's not recognized as good art until, you know, 20 years down the line when people can look back at it and say, wow, it really captured that era.
And so they're thinking about actually opening up the official... royal art. So there's a catch of art that is, so there's been several art exhibits that have been quite historical in Japan, and we've seen all of them. We're not going to be able to see this one, unfortunately, but we saw a Pure Land Buddhist art exhibit where everything had been enshrined for hundreds of years. And it was the first time this art had been seen in hundreds of years. We were able to see that in Nara when it happened. And then there was of course, to not be outdone, the Shinto artists did the same thing. And so we were able to see a lot of really beautiful Shinto art. And then now they're doing... the imperial art, and I'm so bummed that they're choosing to do it now. And they're doing it now to stir up tourism. But when these special art exhibit happens, they're massive and people go in mass. And you have to like walk in a line, and it's really, really intense. So like we've done Triennial, and we've done like we went to the Spanish guy. We saw his work.
Yeah, Salvador Dali.
We saw Salvador Dali's work, and it was a really great collection because it had his fashion, his sculpting.
Yeah, they had costumes on display and perfume bottles he had made and all kinds of
letters he had written.
Yeah, so just more than his famous paintings.
Yeah, so they're really, really well put together exhibits, and I'm really bummed. I hope they film it and put it on YouTube, because lately that's what we've been doing. We've been going to art shows, art exhibits on YouTube, which has been great for us.
Yeah,
because so we just kick back and I'm like, oh, honey, let's do the Van Gogh exhibit today.
So this one I think is going to depend on how long things last as far as being stuck inside and how far we want to travel, because it's going to start in Yokohama, which is south of Tokyo.
Yeah.
And then it's
really far for us to travel for art.
And then it's going to be here until like May or June of next year, of this year. I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, it's almost a month. 2021, baby.
I know. It's like almost a month in. I keep forgetting it.
Happy New Year. We didn't say it on the other one. It feels so obligatory.
Yeah.
So we didn't do it on the obligatory one. But I cracked. I did it.
I knew you would eventually.
You knew I would eventually. You know, I'd break down and say Happy New Year.
Yeah, so it's supposed to run until June here. And then it's supposed to move to Osaka and run through 2022. I forget how late in 2022.
So you might be able to make the Osaka 2022, make a weekend of it.
Because Osaka's not that far from here. It's about 50 minutes by train.
Yeah. That's not bad. Yeah, we go see it in Osaka. It's a bummer that it's going to be here in the summer.
So, and that what that is that they're gathering the private collections housed at the museums of these three museums.
No, it's specifically the Emperor's private art collection, the Emperor's private art museum,
which are curated at these three museums, because the collection is spread across many museums across Japan.
That only royalty and royal guests are allowed to see.
Right. And so that's what happened with the Nara thing too, is that only the curators got to see these. And I think the Nara Museum displays something like 3% of its collection at one time. So it was a big deal. And they do the same thing in the U.S. too. If you go to the Smithsonian, you're only seeing a very, very tiny part of their collection. And if you want to see things that aren't on display, you need to be an academic who's studying it and get special permission.
Yeah.
Whole thing. So it's not a Japan conspiracy. It's a worldwide museum conspiracy to keep us from seeing all the art.
Yeah. And the Mutter Museum has a YouTube channel. A lot of the museums and the Smithsonian, they now have YouTube channels where they're showing some of these pieces that they don't normally show.
Right.
As a means to drum up money for the museums.
I think that's cool.
The museums are really struggling right now because you can't go out.
Yeah, because you and I went to the Mutter Museum. Rasta was with us. The three of us went to the Mutter Museum in Philadelphia.
Because we're good parents.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah, because we're good parents.
Yeah, it's a museum of anatomy. And so
someone described it to me as a museum of medical atrocities. And I thought, no, it's a museum of medical science. And if you think people donating their body to science after they're dead is an atrocity, I'm sorry for you. I don't. I personally don't.
For me, I thought the coolest display was where I forget the exact process, but they basically pumped wax or something else through the veins and
the venous system. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was dye.
Yeah. Yeah. And the nervous system, and like had basically a 3D sculpture where you could see an actual person's insides because they had been preserved.
Yeah. So the nervous system was really cool.
Yeah. It was very cool.
Yeah. Because you don't think of the nervous system of like actually having a structure,
mm-hmm.
but it does, like veins. So there are neural pathways, and those are actual physical structures.
I do think about it having a structure a lot, but that's my own personal thing.
For me, it felt like artistry. I think it disturbed a lot of people because for some reason they chose to put glass eyeballs on both of the sculptures.
Yeah.
And if they didn't have eyeballs, it would be hard to see them as people.
Mm.
So they would do weird things, like one of the sculptures had dentures and glass eyes, which I was like, okay, that's a weird artistic choice, but
yeah.
So for me, I look at imperialism, kind of bringing it just roughly and aggressively back with no gentle segues here, and I don't know how to feel about it. I know that it's very upsetting for my friends who are Chinese when Japan starts talking about imperialism. And I know that like in February, March, and April, I don't mix my friends that are from different countries because my Korean friends feel very differently about it than my Chinese friends do. my Chinese friends feel offended by the fact that the emperor still exists at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that this is how all Chinese people in Japan feel. I'm saying these are how my friends feel.
Yeah.
And this is their truth, and they've given me permission to say it. And my Korean friends feel obligated to be outraged, but don't seem to care. They're like, yeah, it's a thing. It happened in history. I'm not oppressed.
And I think that's where the selection bias is really interesting, because you get a much stronger feelings in Korea. I think the people who are...
You think that they do, based on what's published, based on one article you read in the news. You don't actually know.
Based on them regularly drumming up anti-Japanese sentiment when it's convenient for them. So it's...
That would be like looking at pictures that show the Nazi Party here in Japan and saying that Japan is ruled by the Nazi Party.
I'm not saying that it's ruled, but I think that there's...
I think you're completely ignorant of how Koreans feel in Korea. You don't speak Korean.
I don't.
You've been to Korea 4 times.
Right. But I don't speak Korean.
Why are you saying that you know how Koreans in Korea feel?
I'm not saying I know how Koreans in Korea feel. What I'm saying is I think that...
No, you said that I think it's selection bias. How many Koreans do you know?
I don't know...
You don't even know my Korean friends.
I don't know your Korean friends. I think I know about...
You have talked to exactly how many Koreans about this?
I haven't talked to any Koreans about this because I feel like their feelings about Japanese nationalism and that are irrelevant. Because I know about, I think, probably 1 or 2 dozen Koreans, and they're all math people, which is how I know them.
Yes, and so it's not that their feelings are irrelevant. It's that you find the discussion about Japanese imperialism to be irrelevant. And the only reason you're discussing it with me this week is because you want me to talk on the podcast. And you can't think of any topics on your own.
I don't think it's irrelevant. I think that Japanese imperialism...
I just got like really offended that you were like going to pontificate to me. Because I think sometimes you don't understand how it lands. It landed a little bit condescending on something. So for me, when the fact that I've talked with Koreans about it, because I find it interesting, and imperialism isn't actually one of your interests. And so you don't actually talk to anyone about imperialism other than me. And it only comes up when I mention it, because you don't find it to be interesting in the least.
Yeah, the militarism, I think, is a different issue, which I did talk about with people at my last job about, because they were interested in it.
Yeah, but you're not interested in militarism either. I mean, why not just be authentic and be like, yeah, I find both of these things to be irrelevant because they don't impact my life.
I find both of them to be places where I'm out of my depth because I don't have any context in it. And even the American imperialism, I feel uncomfortable and out of my depth. Most of it happened before I was born, because I was born at the end of the Vietnam War. My birth did not cause the end of the Vietnam War. I was just born at the end of the Vietnam War.
It's the inside joke that we have. I say that Chad's birth brought peace to the world.
Yeah.
And on that day, there was peace because Chad came into the world.
And when I was in high school, people worried about them reinstating the draft for Desert Storm and Desert Shield.
That is really, really scary.
And then, you know, all the other stuff later is why we left, part of why we left the U.S.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have strong feelings about it, but as far as my historical knowledge about the specifics and my contemporary knowledge about how other people feel about it, I'm not very well informed.
So with my Korean girlfriends and I, what we talk about when they talk about imperialism, I listen. I don't, because... None of my people were impacted by Japanese imperialism. That's mm-hmm. just a fact. And when I talk about slavery and racism, they listen. And they don't really contribute because none of their people were impacted by American slavery. But where we do come together is on the decisions that we make every single day in our lives. Because every single day I have to decide whether or not to pass as Japanese. mm-hmm. and I make the decision not to. Like, every day I get up and I actively decide to not pass as Japanese because it gives me so much more freedom. And I lobby them heavily to not pass as Japanese. I try so hard to convince them how much better their life would be. Like, even to the point where when we go out places, I'm like, check it out. Speak no Japanese. Just go with me on this. And they're like, oh my gosh, they're treating you like a princess. I'm like, I know, right? Because the propaganda of the Japanese people are so kind. And that's not really what's going on. What's really going on is that they want to get done. And so if me scratching out and then looking up at them with sad eyes, kitten in the rain, because I don't know how to write my address, which I do know how to do, but they're much quicker at it than I am. And I love being waited on. So I tell them, like, just don't speak any Japanese. Just, like, point and make big round eyes at them. And they will walk you around. They'll, like, do everything for you. You can, like, literally have a seat. And they will literally run around the store for you. And, like, I feel so guilty. I feel so guilty. And I said, why? They're making choices for themselves.
Okay. If you're in the U.S., it would just be called a personal shopper.
That's what I feel like. I feel like I did not tell them, go run, get this for me. And I discovered it purely by accident. I just, like, where can I find this? And I was on the wrong floor. And instead of taking me to the right floor, the person just ran away from me. And I was like, what the heck? And then they ran back down. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I did it again and got away with it. And so, like, I'm trying to get everybody on the system of being like, just don't be Japanese.
Well, and we've had it happen to us when it's less comfortable, which is when we're out in public and we ask directions. We had one woman who was headed to the subway station be like, oh, that's near here, but it's tricky to get to. I'll just go with you the whole way.
And I always enjoy that. Chad doesn't enjoy it. So maybe everybody doesn't enjoy it.
I feel like I was putting them out of their way. Like, I had obviously delayed their trip.
I felt like they were bored and found us interesting. And they were getting to speak in English and tell us all these little facts about their neighborhood that they wanted to talk about, because they were just saying the most irrelevant things. They got to use all of their English. And I think I just did a great service for that person.
I think this is where
egocentric.
I think this is where our job histories come in differently, because I have never felt like I am entertaining to anyone.
I feel like I entertain the heck out of everybody.
Yeah.
I've been an entertainer for most of my life.
And that's exactly what I was saying. Like, clubs would pay you to go be at the club so that people would come to the club because you're so entertaining.
Yeah.
And TV shows would be like, come on the show and entertain our audience.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying, is I've never been an entertainer.
Yeah, I was, for most of my life, I was an entertainer. So I've been an entertainer and a therapist. I've been a bunch of other things, too, because being an entertainer is not steady money.
Yeah.
So I've done other things to subsidize entertainment, the money I was making as an entertainer. But you don't think that somebody making a choice to, like, not get on a subway train, making a choice to walk a quarter of a mile out of their way, half a mile round trip, out of their way, that they're not doing that to entertain themselves?
I don't. And I really don't. I was just thinking about it.
How does us asking directions obligate them to take us?
See, I was thinking about this while you were talking, because I was thinking she's going to ask, how does us asking?
Yeah, I'm totally going to ask. I'm like, where are you at with this? We entertained her.
It's the Mormon guilt. I was raised that, like, if somebody asks for something, you have to do it or you're a bad person.
I don't think she was Mormon.
I don't think she was Mormon either. I'm saying that the way that I grew up, if anybody asked for something and I didn't do it for them, I was made to feel like a terrible, awful person. And so doing things for people was never a pleasure. I did not want to get them another refill of soda at the fast food place. No, no, no. I wanted to get paid, but I would feel like an awful person if somebody asked me to do something and I didn't do it.
See, I voluntarily set up the salad bar at the fast food place.
That's different because you're doing it before it's open.
Yeah, and it got me off salad bar for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Because if you set it up, everybody just leaves you the hell alone about salad bar.
Yeah.
So I loved doing the salad bar. And if they're like, no, you can't do salad bar because you never do it. Because I would do salad bar, shake machine, drive through.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you're just so privileged.
And they were like,
on fryers. And I started on the fryers, so no.
I think everybody starts on the fryers.
Yeah, I think so too, because it's like.
They're like, until you're scarred up a certain amount from the splashing grease.
Now I'm hungry. Dang it. I want fried food, and I know I can't eat fried food because I'm still in recovery. Yeah, like, so in recovery from pancreatitis, like, the quickest way to tank your pancreas is to eat something fatty. Eat anything with fat in it, and your pancreas will let you know because it will drop you. Like someone just threw a brick in your gut.
I've never had that happen to me.
I've never had it happen to me either.
But okay.
I imagine it would be, like, super painful.
Okay, yeah, I can imagine that that would be super painful.
And I think they would hit my breasts because they're so big. I don't think they would actually be able to hit my stomach. My breasts are perky, y'all. You can tell my breasts from my stomach. But I don't think they're just such, like, a bigger object. And
yeah.
I don't trust anybody's aim because my aim is horrible.
Yeah. Like, all the times I've seen you throwing bricks, you have been very bad with your aim at bricks.
No, you've seen me throw stuff.
Yes, but not bricks.
What have you seen me throw? You've seen me throw paper. And paper's hard to throw at.
Paper is hard. And keys. I dodge.
I do try to throw you. I stopped for years. Because you're like, it is assault at this point if you try and throw my keys to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, here, babe, catch this. And you're like, tell me where you're going to throw it. And then you jump out of the way. So I think you're not making a good faith effort to catch what I'm throwing.
I was absolutely not making a good faith effort. And I made that clear. I would tell you, I am not going to try and catch them. I am going to let them drop to the ground and then pick them up.
Why wouldn't you just catch them?
It hurts.
Okay. That makes sense. Because I like to lay in bed. That's just an established fact. And partially because I'm sick, so I live from my bed. Except for when I don't.
Yeah. It is kind of
when I work.
Yeah.
So imperialism is a tricky subject, as you can see for us. One we don't talk about amongst ourselves very often. And it's this time of year that I think about it. And I thought, we've never talked about Japan being imperialistic and, like, the type, like, it seems like the current political party that's in power, the Democratic Party that's in power.
The one that's been in power all except for 2.5 years since World War II.
Yeah. And it seems like they just really miss being a global superpower. And living here in Japan, that's kind of scary sometimes, because in the current state with the United States, I think people don't understand that what happened in the past 4 years with America's war on trade war with China is that China has gone around and strengthened its financial relationships with other countries, and specifically like Australia. Like, it has a stranglehold on Australia financially, and Australia is a major stronghold in terms of intelligence for American intelligence.
Yeah.
And they've done the same thing, and Japan is now considering, should they strengthen ties with China, and should they strengthen ties in Oceania? Because what happened in the past 4 years in the United States is that the world realized that things can change drastically and dramatically when it comes to U.S. politics in every 4 years.
And the thing that Japan was doing, and this was back in 2016, was it was heavily promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah.
It was saying, this is what's going to get the economy, like, solid. This is how we're going to solidify trade with other countries. And the U.S. for a while was like, yes, we're down with the TPP. And then the support for that fell away in the U.S. as, oh, it's establishing a one world order and all kinds of, like, things about job outsourcing. And Japan didn't have a plan for it falling apart.
Yeah. And so also Japan is really big on recycling.
Yes.
And really big. Japan does care and take the climate crisis really seriously. And if we don't bring China purely and solidly into the first world, then it's tanking all of Asia's recycling programs.
Yes.
Because right now, for all of the... So the number one producer of cell phones in the world is China. And they take all of that chemical waste. And the reason that people do it in China is because China's laws on waste and chemicals and pollution and all of that. But it's affecting like China's food, and it's affecting, it's really damaging to the country of China. Just like it's really damaging to the country of India to do most of the leather dye and all of that. So when I'm thinking about imperialism, I think about the history of imperialism and the countries that were most devastated by imperialism, and that where you can still see the legacy of imperialism, where they just pulled out and left no infrastructure, and they left no support. And then what came in its place? What replaced it? How was it replaced? And how did they reform? And I think looking at Japan, Japan did a really great job in putting something else in its place. And I think that the United States occupied Japan for a really long time after World War II.
It was about 6 years.
That's a really long time to occupy a country, because it wasn't exactly 6 years after the end of World War II, because World War II did not end all at once.
Yes, and there were VE days and VJ day.
And so like the European war ended on at a whole entire different years difference between when it ended in Asia versus when it ended in Europe. And looking at Japan's ability to say, no, we're going to still keep our culture and we're not going to assimilate, and just the will of the people in Japan. I'm not saying that countries that didn't keep their culture were weak-willed, and I'm not saying that because I'm indigenous and I'm Cherokee, and the Cherokee Nation went full Christian and bought in. And so I'm not looking down my nose at anybody. It's just interesting to me and sad and messed up. And when every time it comes back up again, I think because I have Chinese friends and because I have Korean friends and because I have Japanese friends, I get three different views. And then I also have foreign friends. And it's interesting to me how for the foreign friends, it's not a big deal and it's not anything painful. And it's interesting to me that for my particular friends, I don't know how all Koreans feel about it in Japan, but my girlfriends that are Korean, they feel awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they're put in an awkward position. And my Chinese friends feel angry and hurt. And my Japanese friends feel conflicted and confused. They don't understand why. And then it leads to talking about America.
Yeah.
And American imperialism. And those conversations aren't fun, but I have them. And so it's just a really weird time, and this year I'm not having any of those conversations because I'm sequestered.
Yes.
And you don't have them.
I tend to talk more about economics with people, and I think economic domination and all of that is its own subject that's separate from the I feel like military expansionism is much more explicit than economic.
Yeah, and they're looking at doing military expansionism.
That's what I'm saying. That's much more explicit than economic. Like when you send troops to somewhere, it's much more clear what you're doing than if expats move to your country and start businesses, for example. Mm. Like, are we part of the American invasion because we've moved here and have started businesses?
Mm. I hadn't thought about an American invasion. I don't think Americans are invading. We're not the largest expat group.
Not even close.
Yeah, so I don't know what you're talking about.
But that would be like saying that just because, like, America sent troops, if other countries sent more troops, that Americans weren't trying to expand there. I think every country is trying to expand.
Do you think that America is actively trying to expand into Japan right now?
I think that America is not trying to actively expand into Japan. I think there are other countries.
America is pulling money out of Japan right now.
Yeah, I think there are other countries where they do foreign direct investment and stuff.
Okay.
I'm just saying that the economics of it is like a different, it's a different world than the military of it.
So this is a wild and weird trip about imperialism, and do not trust any of it as fact. These are just our lived experiences. Please Google it. Like, I didn't Google anything before having this conversation. I was just like, I know, I'm thinking about imperialism. And that's what we're going to talk about, because Chad
exactly.
wants me to record an episode.
Exactly. And Christopher was there for all of these events, but she's yeah. old enough that her memory has gone.
There you go. There you have it. And so we're going to be talking about book covers, and we're going to be talking about Grace Dan Zeus Lived the Dream, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Not My Ruckus over on the Take Two. I hope that you found this interesting and entertaining.
Yes.
I say with a question mark, because now I'm not so sure that it was entertaining, but I did find it interesting. So
yeah.
we hope you tune in next week, and I doubt it's going to be political, but I don't know. So yeah.
It's always a mystery.
Yeah. So thanks for listening this week. We totally appreciate y'all getting us into the top 30. Yay! I'm still pumped about that. I'm probably going to be pumped about it for the whole year. I hope we're there next year kind of thing. And we hope that you follow us on over to the Take Two. And if you don't, that you join us next week. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening. You can keep the conversation going on our website at themusicsinjapan.com. That's the music spelled M-U-S-I-C-K-S. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at The Musics on both.
And if you'd like to support us, please visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, join a Patreon tier, or send us a one-time donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. We hope you'll listen again next week.
Bye.